When I am weak, then I am strong. In the span of a few paragraphs in 2 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul continues a theme that runs through most of the letters of his writings included in the New Testament. He speaks candidly of strengths and weaknesses, elations and sufferings, highs and lows. The youth sometimes go around the circle and do the same sort of thing, telling about their weeks in terms of highs and lows. Sometimes they call them sweets and sours, or apparently yeets and yachts. Paul says, I was in yeet. I was elated in the mystery of the highest heavens, and I've been yacht, dragged down to the depths of human suffering. I have no idea if I've used those correctly grammatically, but you get the idea. In telling his own story, the apostle says, I've been on top of the world, and I've been on the business end of a whipping rod. In this unforgettable passage, the apostle says, I will not boast of my strengths, but I will of my weaknesses, because that's where I learned God's strength becomes perfected. Years ago, the band Coldplay, or you might know them as off-brand U2, sang a song about highs and lows. Some of the lyrics said, I used to rule the world. Seas would rise when I gave the word. But now in the morning, I sleep alone and sweep the streets I used to own. One minute, I held the key. The next, the walls were closed on me, and I discovered that my castles stand upon pillars of salt and pillars of sand. The song was called La Vida, Viva La Vida, which means live life. Anyone who's ever lived life has likely had some highs and lows, sweets and sours. It's part of life. It's all part of life. It's part of a nation's life, too. Highs and lows, strengths and weaknesses, history to boast, and history to confess. Isn't this true of our history? I acknowledge 4th of July isn't normally a day to be thoughtful or even confessional about our nation's history. It's more of a day to wonderfully, obnoxiously puff out our chests and ooh and ah at fireworks and eat hot dogs, and I'm in for all of it. And yet we've realize that we respond to a higher calling when we honor July 4th as a capstone Sunday in a season of Sundays of peace and justice. How do Christians live out our vocation as ministers of reconciliation as the church in America in the particular context of the American past, which includes slavery and systematic racism and the church's complicity in it? How do we be ministers of reconciliation in the context of the American present, including last summer's severe racial trauma? And how do we live our ministry in the context of America's future? What will it be? What can it be? What is our place in it? This season spans June 19th to July 4th, as you know, the space between Juneteenth and Independence Day. And the hope isn't just that the season occupies the empty space on the calendar, but it holds these two in the depths that they have within them, holds them together. These two holidays are now both national federal holidays. As of this year, just a few weeks ago, June 19th, Juneteenth, which celebrates the end of slavery, joined July 4th as a national holiday. Oddly, in the eyes of some, insightfully in the eyes of others, Juneteenth also joined July 4th as an Independence Day. Did you pick up on that? The holiday was established by Congress and signed by the President as officially Juneteenth National Independence Day. And that prompted at least one white congressman from Kentucky to grumble, understandably in a way, that you can't have two Independence Days on a calendar. In his view, July 4th should be Independence Day and Juneteenth something else, something less. He said, naming this day, national, naming this day meaning Juneteenth, National Independence Day will create confusion. And it will push Americans to pick one of those 2 days as their Independence Day based on their racial identity. Well, was he right? A commentary published by an African-American scholar in Chicago said the same thing in a different way. He said, you can't have 2 Independence Days, so we should pick one and not the other. In his view, Juneteenth is the true Independence Day. The other, today, is an undercooked hot dog. It's a firecracker that ends with a whimper and not a bang. Like many Christians and many pastors, more than you realize, I have a pretty ambivalent view of national holidays in church life. Some churches eagerly wrap the cross and the flag way too much for my theology of church and understanding of Jesus. And yet here we are, reflecting on Christian life in America, and it seems right. It seems important. Christian life doesn't exist in a social vacuum or in a history museum. And we all say all the time we want to live our faith in here and out there and in the spaces in between. I guess what I mean to say is we recognize we have some work to do. And there's a very complicated context in which to do the work. In here, in our hearts, in here, in the church, out there, in relationships, in our structures, in the stories we tell of the past, and in the life we make together for the days ahead. So where does all this lead? Maybe you don't stay up nights worrying about this, but this 2 Independence Day thing is either an impossible mess or it's a transformative moment. Do we have July 4th and not June 19th, or vice versa? Or do we have July 4th, the celebration of the Revolutionary War for white America, and June 19th, the celebration of the end of slavery for black America? Is that where we're headed? It may be where we've already been, just most of us. I mean, most white Americans didn't realize it. I didn't. We find a guide for this road from a long time ago in a very different era. In 1852, Frederick Douglass gave a speech hosted by a ladies' group of abolitionists in upstate New York. In attendance were politicians, including President Millard Fillmore. Look at this moment as an audaciously American moment. For over an hour, some of the most powerful people in the country sat and listened to an escaped slave speak to them and preach to them. Douglass was born in Maryland. He never knew his father. He was separated from his mother forcibly as a young child. He ran away and successfully escaped at age 21 and became one of the finest orators in our nation's history. At a July 4th celebration in 1852, he gave the speech in which he at length praises the founders of this nation, their ideals, their courage, their accomplishments. I'd like to quote him at length. He said, "Fellow citizens, I am not wanting in respect for the fathers of this republic. The signers of the Declaration of Independence were brave men. They were great men, too, great enough to give fame to a great age. It does not often happen to a nation to raise at one time such a number of truly great men. The point from which I'm compelled to view them is not certainly the most favorable, and yet I cannot contemplate their great deeds with less than admiration. They were statesmen, patriots, and heroes. And for the good they did and the principles they contended for, I will unite with you to honor their memory. They loved their country better than their own private interests. And though this is not the highest form of human excellence, all will concede that it is a rare virtue, and that when it is exhibited, it ought to command respect. He who will intelligently lay down his life for his country is a man whom it is not in human nature to despise. Your fathers staked their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on the cause of their country. And in their admiration of liberty, they lost sight of all other interests. You might notice in the excerpt that I've read, and if you read more of the speech that he gives, you'll notice that all the while Douglass was praising the American founders with high language, he kept saying, your nation, your founders. His audience must have picked up on that too. Not our founders, our ideals, but yours. As a black man, as a former slave in an era of slavery, he was looking from the outside in on celebrations of freedom. But it was from that perspective that he could help them see from the inside out. And then he asked a question they probably hadn't thought much about, even in their enlightened abolitionist intentions. It's one thing to do good. It's another to have empathy toward the other that seeks to understand the world from their perspective. Doing good can change something for someone else. But having empathy changes something in you in relationship with someone else. What, Douglass asked rhetorically, is your 4th of July to an enslaved man? For those in any generation who have ears to hear, his answer is a piercing thorn in the flesh of American self-congratulation. He answered his own question like the prophet Amos. It took just as much courage to say, and it takes just as much to hear. But let us hear his words. What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer. A day that reveals to him more than all other days in the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is a constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham, your boasted liberty an unholy license, your national greatness swelling vanity. Your sounds of rejoicing are empty and heartless. Your denunciation of tyrants, brass-fronted impudence. Your shouts of liberty and equality, hollow mockery. Your prayers and hymns, your sermons and thanksgivings, with all your religious parade and solemnity, are to him mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy. A thin veil to cover up crimes which would disgrace a nation of savages. There's not a nation on the earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of these United States at this very hour. Now, perhaps there's limited value in preaching over 170 years later, the lessons of an America still trapped in the bonds of slavery. But as we've noted, history is not in the past. History continues through the present. The past is not just past, and it is certainly not dead. The vestiges of the history that we live linger on, and the fights about whether we should be honest about that history are front and center. But here in 1852, as a black man standing before a white audience, saying the 4th of July is yours, not mine. A former slave standing before a free audience in a time when slave hunters could find you anywhere and take you back south where you came from. Courage he had. I'm not sure which takes more courage, to stand there as he did that day, or to be able to find something praiseworthy in the founders whose nation enslaved your grandma and your mama and your daddy and you, or to speak this kind of vulnerable truth to people who are more in the mood to be congratulated for their liberated northern sensibilities rather than confronted with their own complicity in the suffering of others. Courage, grace, strength. The Lord said, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness." Was not God's power made known in Douglas' weakness that day? Certainly. The historical question is, could God's power be made known in a nation whose national weakness, its original sin, had yet to be reckoned in 1852. The question for now is whether we can walk toward a future that reckons honestly with courage and humility with the past and the present. Reckoning that racism isn't a historical footnote in the great American novel. It's the ink with which the story is written. And yet, what story generations from now is yet to be told of us all? There are many chapters in this book that are yet to be written. Douglas could see what it would take for a nation rooted in high ideals and devastating racism to come to reckoning. Can we? Do we have the courage to be as truthful with ourselves about our weaknesses? Can we trust God's grace to write a new story in us and to empower us as a people leading the way of justice, reconciliation, peace, even love? I have hope. I have great hope. I was told recently of one of your grandchildren, 8 years old, who's a budding history buff, but who sometimes gets his history a little mixed up, as we do when we're 8, or 48, I'm sure. So recently, he'd been thinking about things. You could see it on his furrowed brow on his forehead, and you could hear it in his voice. He looked at his grandpa and said, "Grandpa, when we won the Revolutionary War, we weren't really free." "What do you mean?" Grandpa asked, thinking this was a moment to straighten him out on some confusion he had about history. 8-year-old boy, he said, "We weren't free. We were free-ish." Grandpa leaned in. "How so?" That 8-year-old boy said one word: slavery. I felt chills when I heard that story. If an 8-year-old great-grandson of a legitimate World War II war hero can understand that in history, then we can have eyes for the present. But you know the key word in his little history lesson? Did you catch it? We. Not they. Not some of them. We weren't yet free. That's the whole point of Frederick Douglass's speech 170 years ago, and of Wendell Berry's reflection we heard a couple of weeks ago, and of Catherine's encouragement to us last Sunday. We're all bound in this together. As long as slavery existed, we were all caught in the net. And as long as we don't shed the old sin which still clings to our divided lives and our hard hearts, we're still not running the race set before us, and we're still not free. Free-ish, maybe. Americans thrive on our power. It's kind of our thing. It's our brand. But God's grace isn't made known among a people obsessed with protecting their power through violence or oppression or even racist attitudes or structures. God's grace is perfected in persons and among a people who acknowledge their weaknesses, who confess their sins, who ask for divine help, who show humility, and who listen to the wisdom and the stories of others. There aren't parades or fireworks for this kind of work, but there is a table and broken bread and poured wine and the presence of the crucified and risen Christ. And there is grace being perfected in you. And that alone is our hope. Let the church arise and lead the way. Let us bless this nation. America, America. May God shed his grace on thee and crown your good with brotherhood all the way from sea to shining sea. And then we shall be free. And you shall be beautiful. Amen.